Hi, I'm Paul Camillos from Shooting the Breeze podcast. Join the STB crew for conversations and stories around women's hoops and women in hoops, inspiring players, amazing coaches, and the legends behind the scenes. It's our seventh season. Drop us a like and review, and make sure to subscribe for early access and other bonus content.
And so the fact that it was such a big deal for female athletes that we made news globally, A, it says there's a lot of work to be done still in this space, but B, I think it shows how historic this deal actually is.
Welcome to Shooting the Breeze. I'm Paul Camillos, and joining me today, CEO of the WNBL, Jenny Sager. Jenny, welcome to the show. It's great to have you back again.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Jenny, first of all, it's been a big couple of months since we spoke to you down in Canberra on that live pod. A lot going on. And probably the biggest news recently is the CBA. And congratulations for getting the CBA done, because it's obviously a significant achievement for the league. And fan reaction seems to have been really positive so far. I'm just wondering, what sort of feedback have you guys been getting from your own sources?
The feedback has been amazing from, you know, the players, obviously a lot of collaboration with ABPA, the Players Association, and the clubs went into this with the league as well. So really grateful for the collaboration there also. But the excitement from the players has been tremendous. I think two of my favorite calls that I got was one from someone who works at another women's sporting code in Australia, who said, well, thanks a lot. You've made my day really tough, because now my boss said, well, what are we going to do to follow this up? Which is a great thing to hear, because we really do want to pave the way for women's sport in general. And then I think the second one was a call from my dad, where he was like, my gosh, I woke up this morning and saw this news in America. And so the fact that it was such a big deal for female athletes that we made news globally, A, it says there's a lot of work to be done still in this space, but B, I think it shows how historic this deal actually is.
Yeah, one of the key things for me is not only the size of the increases over the period of the CBA, but also the fact that it's now going to provide clarity for the next 4 years. And to me, it's a really foundational step. And it provides a lot more stability and growth potential for the league. From the perspective of the league, and from your perspective, how do you see this is going to help the league grow?
I think, you know, one of the things that I've been vocal about since I came into this role was making sure that we retain a level of elite talent, and that part of that is also keeping our elite athletes here in Australia. And so this agreement directly relates to that, where I see it being 4 years, and also the changes in the salaries as well, as offering those athletes a lot more security than they've had in the past. I mean, imagine having to negotiate those terms annually. Like, that does not offer a lot of security. So 4 years provides a lot of that security, and combined with the changes around wages, I think that also gives the athletes an opportunity to stay in Australia longer. And we know that that is something they want to do. They've expressed that, and they want to play at home. And so I think those two things combined really contribute to that.
On that, do you think that you're saying that it's going to help to keep athletes in Australia, but there's also a proportion of athletes, particularly those who are knocking on the Opals door, who need more of that international experience. Do you think it's going to make it a little bit more of a do I, don't I kind of situation for them?
I think so. I mean, again, it's certainly made global news. And I think understanding that they're coming to a country in a league where this is a priority and this is important makes it that much more attractive. I think also, you know, if you look at even Caitlin Clark's salary, like Caitlin Clark's salary is only $100,000 a year. The rest of her income comes from sponsorships. And so I think when you look at someone to you know, her status and her caliber, and compare that, like, we are really against setting a benchmark globally for what it should look like for female basketball players. And so I think it does make Australia more attractive. I mean, by all accounts, the athletes that come and play in Australia absolutely love playing here. And so I think this can only make the experience even better. But I think, again, that comes down to the wonderful partnership that we have with the WNBA as well. And there's certainly a lot of respect between the leagues around the Australian athletes that we send over to America to play in the WNBA. And similarly, being able to have some WNBA athletes come and play here in Australia.
The other part to that is, how about bringing the potential for being able to attract European talent into Australia? I mean, obviously, it's easier with the WNBA because the seasons work out together well.
Yeah.
How do you see the potential for European talent to come to the league now?
I think there's a lot of opportunity to grow the relationships with both European talent and talent through Asia Pacific. And those are absolutely things that we want to explore, you know, over the next few years. But I think also, you know, the new CBA has a provision for two marquee players, and only a portion of their contracts actually count toward the salary cap. So the first marquee has to be a local, the second could be an import. And so, you know, there's parameters around the level that marquee player needs to be at. But at the same time, I think it does present opportunities for, you know, Europe, Asia Pacific, America, like wherever those athletes come from.
Well, you've mentioned now the marquee player. So that one's really interesting because it's not just a marquee player and there's a percentage of the salary contribution to the cap. There's also a series of qualifying conditions for a marquee player. Yeah. Now, can you run through those with us?
Sure. So some of those include being a high-level WNBA player, a member of the Opals, a member of an all-WNBL first or second team. There's not, at this point in time, you know, specific parameters around Europe or Asia, as you just touched on. But I think, again, like making sure, and the whole point of this is to attract a high level of elite talent in the WNBL and make sure that that's sustainable. And that's really the point of those qualifications.
Now, another part of and very interesting part to the CBA was the funding component for the ABPA's wellness and engagement services, mm-hmm. which, if I did my maths right, increases by more than over 150% over the life of the CBA. Are there any specific outcomes expected from this initiative?
Yeah, I think there were a couple things that were really important to us as we went into this process, and that's obviously mental health and physical well-being and what that looks like for the athletes, but similarly, that career development and support. And again, that was feedback that I had directly from players when I stepped into this role around really wanting to make sure that they are supported both mentally and physically throughout their career, but then also thinking about where do they go when they're heading into that transition period at the end of their career? And there's certainly a gap there right now around skills that they develop off court along the way. And so it's really important to us to invest in that space as well and make sure that we're setting them up for success on and off the court.
Yeah, that's really important because that's something that we've touched on a number of times on different podcasts, particularly that transition from being an athlete to the post-athlete career. It's always seemed as though it was there and people just saying, yeah, we need to do something. And it really wasn't happening.
Yeah.
So it's really good to see that there's an expectation that that's going to be part of the process. And I'm also curious in relation to the overall CBA. There's no easy way to put this. Okay.
Here we go.
It's increasing the cost base.
Yeah.
And over the period of 4 years, it's a fairly sizable chunk of revenue that the clubs are going to have to come up with to be able to cover the minimum payments. So the question is, because the league has typically always been a revenue poor situation, the capital values of the clubs goes up, but what sort of steps that you can share with us are in train to try and help the clubs to develop their own revenue streams to be able to deal with that shortfall?
Yeah, there's so many important steps that went into both this process, but also when we looked at building a sustainable financial model for the next 5 years and beyond, because you're right, the clubs, with the exception of one or two, have been losing money during their length of term in the WNBL, and that's not sustainable. And that's why the clubs went to Basketball Australia in 2023 and said, hey, like, we need to look at new ownership because we're not going to survive past the coming years. And so that's why we're here in the first place. And being able to come in and invest a tremendous amount of resources and financial funding to each club over the next 5 years is an important step that we took. And so each club is getting an injection of financial investment, but also resources and support at the league level as well. And that's across the board, not just in the commercial sponsorship space, but also when you think about things like marketing support and community engagement and how we can help them succeed at the league level, because we need each other to succeed. That's obvious. You know, the league is nothing without clubs, and the clubs need the league to succeed, and we all need the athletes to succeed. And so, you know, there has to be a lot of working together and unity and collaboration. And so when we looked at how can we build a financially sustainable model for the league, you're right, there are increases in cost to the clubs over the next few years, but at the same time, there's a tremendous increase in investment that they weren't getting before at the league level. And there is also an increase in support. So those things will balance each other out. And then, of course, there's a little bit of magic that comes into it, where you assume, you know, in 5 years, the league is going to be up here. So the clubs are going to be up here and the athletes are going to be up here. And because of that, hopefully we're all going to be getting a higher level of investment from, you know, commercial sponsors, broadcast partners, you know, what that looks like. So there's a long-term modeling that goes along with that as well.
And the follow-on part of this is the athletes' payments have gone up. Have you forecast in the fact that there's potentially going to be increases that clubs are going to have to try and fund from other areas, so basketball operations, front office, coaching, etc.? And how did that flow into the calculations?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to take everything into account from both an operational standpoint. It's like any business, right? Like, there's operational costs, there's, you know, commercial investment, partnerships, all of that has to be taken into account. And thank God we have a wonderful financial person who specializes in this area, and it's not me. But at the same time, you know, it all absolutely, again, like any other business, you know, you have P&Ls, you have financial models, like, you have to take everything into account. There is a minimum standard that we do want to increase over, you know, the next few years, both again at the league level and the club level, and that those things were taken into account as well in all areas. Like, that's even operational areas where you think about, like, what does lighting look like in venues, for example, or like scoreboards. Everyone loves to talk about the scoreboard. Like, how do we make sure that the scoreboard works at every single game? You know, so there are things like that that you have to take into account, that you go, you know what, this is non-negotiable. Like, we need a working scoreboard in every single venue, you know? And then you figure out, okay, well, how are we going to get there? And then, of course, there are things that happen along the way where you go, you know what, we may not get there in year one, but, like, this is a goal for year two, three, four, five, or beyond. And so you're always kind of balancing the, obviously, the investments that you have, the resources you have, versus, like, what are your achievements and what are those non-negotiables? Back to the scoreboard.
Yeah, I suppose that's one of the key messages that really needs to get out to the fan base, because I think there are a lot of people who are going to be expecting that things are going to magically fix themselves within months. And you know, the reality is that's just not going to happen. There's got to be you guys must have a plan for how you see things developing over the next 1, 2, 3 years.
Yeah.
I think one of the key things that we've been getting is feedback from people saying, we're not hearing enough from the league. Now, you know, obviously, you're building up, you're skilling up, you're staffing up, but what's the plan to try and improve the communications with the fans? Because otherwise, I mean, what I'm expecting is that they'll be going, oh, we expect this, and it's not going to happen, and it doesn't happen, not because you don't want it to happen, but because there's just not enough time to get everything done between now and the start of the next season.
Yeah, well, let's remember we only took ownership weeks ago. You know, while I've been here for, you know, 4 or 5 months at this point, we actually only took ownership of the league a couple of weeks ago. So, and within those first few weeks, like, look at what our huge announcement was in this last week, right? Mm. Like, to be able to announce this CBA deal is monumental. And so, absolutely, we will, and you will see a lot more of this coming. There will be a lot of announcements over the next 12 months. There'll be a lot more communication. I mean, even things when you think about what happens when you take ownership of a league, like, we haven't had access to social media accounts, website, you know, all of those things, which are key ways that you communicate externally. We haven't even had access to those. And so you'll absolutely start to see a lot more. And we've been working on some really exciting things, which we'll be able to put out over the next, you know, couple of months. And so I think everyone will, both fans, you know, athletes, everyone will start to hear and see a lot more coming from the league.
Okay. Now, I'm just going to say this. If you don't want to touch this one, that's fine. But I just got to ask the question. This week, we have to say that the elephant in the room has been Adelaide. There's been a lot of talk back and forth on that. And I understand there's a lot of negotiations going on in the background. The bigger concern is that there's a potential impact and delay on free agency until that settles out. What sort of timeline do you think we're going to be looking at before there's some enough stability to be able to kick off free agency?
Yeah, so I'm happy to talk about it. And you're right that we can't open up free agency until we know what our eighth club is. Now, just to be really clear and to, you know, clear up any confusion, in August 2024, the owners of the Adelaide Lightning, being Poligra, gave notice to Basketball Australia that they would be relinquishing their license and walking away from women's basketball in South Australia. So yep. That was in August 2024. Following that, they made an attempt to sell the team's license and they weren't successful. So, you know, the conversation that's being had around, oh, they want to stay in and whatever, they gave their notice in August 2024. And so I think that's important to point out. Again, we only took ownership a couple of weeks ago. And so the steps that legally you can take to be able to move forward with a team in Adelaide or anywhere else have to come after that. And so we've been really clear publicly that we would love to keep a team in Adelaide, like that, you know, there's a rich history there of basketball. There's a great number of athletes that have gone on and played, you know, in the Olympics, WNBA and beyond. And so we'd love to keep a team in Adelaide. The model, again, that was under the previous owners was not financially sustainable. And so there's not a world where we can keep going under that model. And so we are exploring options as quickly as we can. But if we can't find a financially viable way to continue in Adelaide, then we'll be forced to go somewhere else this season. We know that, again, we're super conscious of the fact it's delaying free agency. So we're going as quickly as we can.
Okay. So this is like completely unrelated to anything that we've talked about so far.
Are we going to talk Bernese Mountain Dogs again then?
Actually, I was going to say, do we have, or has there been any discussion about, you know, an official mascot breed for the league?
Hey, well, you know what, Paul? I'm going to have to, as we say in America, plead the fifth on that, because I'm not going to say no, but I'm not going to say yes at this point. But let's go back to where I said a few minutes ago that we will have a lot of exciting announcements coming up in the next few months. So let's park that one there for now.
Okay. That sounds good to me. Okay. Jenny, look, thanks so much for jumping on for this quick sort of catch up on the CBA and things about the WNBL. Really enjoyed having a quick chat to you about this, and we're really looking forward to being able to get you back on the show at a later stage once, you know, the ownership has gone past the first few weeks and we can have a really much more in-depth conversation.
Absolutely. And as always, thank you so much for your support of the sport and women's basketball particularly. I mean, you all are just such great supporters, and so we can never thank you enough for that.
Great. Thanks, Jenny.
Thanks. Go give that doggy a cuddle, and we'll talk to you soon.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you get our latest pod. And we really appreciate if we could get a like and a review so we can extend the reach to more listeners. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.